This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte's dining options have been multiplying and in many cases improving in quality in the last few years. Just about any kind of food in any price range can now be found throughout the city. But tough economic times, well, may mean that many people are keeping a careful eye on the money they spend on dining out. They may still be choosing to go to restaurants, but now want to make sure that the restaurants they choose are serving good food and giving customers value for their dollar. Aside from personal experience and word of mouth, the best way to get that information is by paying attention to one of the areas, or all three of the areas, food critics. They eat out a lot, and they write about their experiences in various publications. We ask them to put down their forks for an hour, although it seems they brought food and couldn't, so that may not be possible. We invite them to come here for an hour and at the same time, in the same place, and dish the dirt or serve up some well-deserved praise. We do this about twice a year, and today we welcome back Helen Schwab, Tricia Childress, and Heidi Bellotto. Helen has reviewed restaurants since 1988 for the Charlotte Observer. In the process, she says, she's eaten pig ears, canvassed the area for international cuisines, and bled all over the floor of Johnson & Wales University. You want to tell me more about that?
Not really, no.
It was in my class.
And that's the voice of Peter Reinhardt, obviously, our chef on assignment from Johnson & Wales. Not only does he teach about food and cooking, he writes about it in award-winning cookbooks, of which there are many. And he has now re-entered the world of restaurants by opening his own pizza establishment, Pie Town.
Pie Town.
One can only hope that the critics gathered here have something nice to say about Pie Town. We'll get to that later.
I'm about to leave the room.
That's to say. Tricia Childress is a cuisine writer for Creative Loafing who started her weekly restaurant and wine reviews in 1995. She continues those columns, numbering about 650 to date, and also writes a monthly mouthful feature, which is a kind of roundup of eateries. She's also an assistant professor at Johnson & Wales University who has not yet bled all over the floor at
Not
Johnson
yet.
And Wales. And Heidi Bellotto, formerly Heidi Edidin, has been writing about food and restaurants for a number of Charlotte-based magazines, newspapers, and websites for more than a decade. In the spring of this year, she joined Charlotte Living Magazine, and beginning with the January 09 issue, her writing will appear in the Very Culinary and Taster's Choice sections. That's not a coffee section, is it?
No.
Okay. Of the magazine, and her musings on wine and winemakers will be featured in her Wine No column.
Pretty clever, huh?
Yeah, that's W-I-N-E-K-N-O-W. Welcome back. Good to see you all three.
Good to
again.
See you
all
too.
Four of
good
you, as a matter of
fact.
Thank you.
So put it in perspective. 2008, how has it been in the world of restaurants and food and eating out and involves bakery stuff, so bakeries too. How has it been? Are we getting better? Is it worse? Is it about the same?
It's a challenging time for most restaurateurs. It's very difficult because it's challenging for everyone. Everyone here in Charlotte is having hard times, so it's going to...
When did that start? When did that begin to manifest itself? Because I've had economists on here...
I think
here.
John Connaughton said it was September 17th, didn't he, yesterday?
Yes, he does. Yeah, he gave it at 3:26:42 p.m.
There you go.
Yeah.
It was about that time.
Yeah.
It was about the day after we opened Pie Town is what happened. We look at the paper the next day and we go, what have we done?
Oh, but you know, at the same time, there's it's tons of places opening up.
Is that wise in this
places.
Environment?
I don't know if it's wise or not.
Well, I think
it's happening.
No. I think it takes a long time to get, you know, to get a restaurant up and going. So these plans probably were already in the works. And the ones that are opening now are just unfortunate. I mean, there's always restaurants like Zebra. Zebra opened up on September 11th, 2001. And they're still here. So.
Yeah, I think you reach a point where you kind of go, we're past the point of no return. You know, we're going to go forward and we're just going to make it work.
Zebra opened on September
yes.
the 11th. That just registered in my
yes.
head.
Yeah.
Holy cow. You've been very quiet in this, Helen. You want to chime in?
I think it's been a rough year for months and months and months, and I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. So I'm not the voice of happiness this morning. Sorry.
When you say, all three of you, when you talk about it being a rough year, look very, very sad about this. You don't have a horse in the race, so why are you sad about this?
Because we lose so much when we lose it. Last time I think I was here, I spoke about small independent operators, and I don't mean to say we lose only when we lose those. We lose lots of good big places too, but anything that brings diversity on a smaller scale, you know, that handicaps diversity in dining, hurts us all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it hurts us socially. It hurts us not just culinarily. There is nothing more important than getting out and finding food and talking to people that are not like you. So that always really frightens me about recessions and economic downturns, because I think we lose a lot.
Well, John Connaughton, who you quoted a second ago, Tricia, who was on this program yesterday, is an economist at UNC Charlotte and does the North Carolina Economic Forecast. The day before yesterday, his advice at a press conference when he announced the new results of the forecast was to go out and buy a car.
Yeah.
And he was serious.
A big car.
Because,
an SUV.
Because consumers support the economy, and the less they support it, the worse the economy gets. It's like a rolling snowball. So what would you say to people as restaurant critics who are kind of keeping a close watch on their wallets?
Go out and eat.
Well, it's really hard, because I've really been thinking about that a lot. You know, I can sit here and say, you got to go eat anyway. And when people are scraping, it's hard to say that. Here's what I would say. Stop drinking when you go out. You laugh, but I'm serious.
But now wait, that you're hurting the restaurateurs, because that's where they make their money.
It is partly where they make their money. But if people, I was talking to somebody yesterday, an owner yesterday, who said lots of concern among upscale places that they are perceived as upscale places, and they are often the first to get, ooh, you know, I can't, I can go out to eat, but I can't go there because that's a treat for myself. He said, but my bar business is great. Figure that one out. Bar business is not
drowning their sorrows.
Well, maybe.
I think historically drinking does tend to go up during, you know, rough economic times. It's kind of counterintuitive, but I think it seems to be what happens.
It makes sense emotionally, but to me, from a restaurant standpoint, you can go to really good restaurants and not spend half of what you're used to spending if you order smarter and you don't drink as much.
Who's being hurt more by this recession? Is it the upscale restaurants where it's hard to get out for less than $60 or $70 a person? Or is it the smaller family-style restaurants where you could eat a lot less expensively, but people who go there generally don't have as much money as the people who eat at, say, Morton's?
I think that depends upon the economics of each individual business and how the structure is set up.
I know that I spoke with George Cushell, who was on the show a few months ago with us, the owner of Shomar's, and I see him frequently, and you know, he told me that while he's getting killed by food costs, that's what's hurting him, that overall his numbers aren't so bad, because a lot of the people who have been putting their money into more expensive restaurants will come to the less expensive sort of family-operated fast casual restaurants.
And I think people who have a lot of money are not going to not go out. So I think it really depends on the place.
So it's the medium price places that might be getting hit the hardest.
It depends on the place.
Okay.
It really does.
Yeah,
it depends on the perception of the place.
It's this kind of restaurant, it's that kind of restaurant. You know, particularly at holiday time, I think people are tending to splurge a little bit, cautiously maybe, but I think people are cutting back a little bit. People are certainly cooking at home more. And so cooking, I will tell you that restaurants that do cooking classes, and in my experience, you know, I teach a lot of cooking classes. We've had lots of people come to cooking classes. That's been
because
very big.
Because they want to cook like the food they eat in the restaurant. They want to cook it at home?
Yeah. And I think restaurants that it is value, and it may just be your perception of it, but it's you know, I think restaurants that do cooking classes, and lots of chefs in Charlotte do, those classes are filled.
I'd like to caution, though, people listening. I remember every time a very popular restaurant's closed, for example, when Tokyo Restaurant closed, I had so many people writing me about, well, why did they close? And I'd be like, when was the last time you were there? And I think that if you have particular restaurants that you like, those are the ones that you should go visit. And because if you don't go visit them, you can't depend on other people to go visit them.
You know, in times of trouble, the retail industry offers incredible sales, like 70% off sales.
So does the restaurant.
And then I was going to say, where are those sales? Where?
Lots and lots.
I've never seen an ad 70% off.
Well, you have to. I think that a lot of the restaurants
like that, although that would be a really interesting kind of 70% off.
I think a lot of restaurants do it via their emails. And I know that several restaurateurs have told me that that's how they reach out to their customers, because they feel like they want to reward the people who come there.
Right.
So if you get on their email list, they'll send out their weekly sales, so they'll tell you what's going on Monday night or whatever.
Well, I do a free cocktail.
I do notes to places do tasting menus. Lucia, I think, is doing a three-course tasting menu for $25. I mean, you're not going to beat that.
Yeah, Dulce is doing a tasting menu, too.
Yeah.
It's a great price.
And those kinds of things are usually listed, like, in the Friday edition. And also in Creative Loafing. We see that in Charlotte Weekly. So, yeah, people who are looking for those values can find them listed both in the newspapers. But I think getting on, if you have a favorite restaurant, find out if they do have a mailing list, an e-list, because you will get those notices and you'll get some special offers that only the regulars will get.
Well, and ask. You know, I would like to see in the coming year, and I think this might happen, restaurants need to be more upfront with their customers right when they're there. You know, come back Monday, wine's half off. I had a server tell me that at a restaurant recently, and I thought, that's the first time I think in 20 years I've had a server say, hey, be sure to come back on X day because we've got this special. And I thought, we need to be doing this all the time.
That's a
great need to be
thing.
Telling people. Yeah. Table tents are one thing, but a server saying it to you, I think restaurants have a lot of room to really improve that sort of customer service and promotion.
I think
is that customer service or is that promotion?
I think it's both.
Okay.
In economic times, when you're offering me something for a lot less, don't tell me it's, you know, a dollar off.
Okay.
Make it be worth my time to listen to you.
Right.
But
how do you feel
smart.
If you're there Monday and you find out that Tuesday is half bottle night?
You know, come next Tuesday.
Come the next week. I think that's just building a relationship with your customers, and to me, that's good service.
Mm. Absolutely.
Well, you know, we spoke a lot about this last year when you were on about the issue of service, and I'm wondering if in the past year, you know, because I know, and I tell people all the time that if you really want to get on the good side of the critics, make sure that your restaurants are giving good service because they're going to be looking at that every bit as much as the food. Do you think that there's been any general improvement in the quality of service in Charlotte in the last year? Are people getting that message?
No.
Not yet.
I have to agree with Helen. I don't think so either. I think in
Except
some
that
cases.
There's one restaurant that where you just ate, wherever they said that.
I think in some cases you'll have one server, or if it's a chef owned or you know, the person that owns the restaurant is right there waiting on you or helping with table. I think then you start to build that personal relationship. But I don't think overall it's taken any tremendous.
Well, look, it's the hardest thing to do.
Oh,
it's
the
most expensive thing to do. I mean, it's crazy expensive to train somebody and to pay them well enough to keep them. So I think people will need to demand it before it happens. I think there needs to be a culture shift, and that hasn't happened yet.
Well, aside from restaurants hurting, what other trends have emerged in 2008 that you find to be
one-syllable
good...
restaurant names? Chow. So, I think you're going to see a big return to value-added, perceived, cheap, quote-unquote, air quotes here, places like Big Daddy's Burger Bar, which has done gangbusters since it opened, like Nick's, which does a Family and Friends, I think, tonight. That's Nick Lavecchia's burger place uptown on Tryon.
Is that open?
Like, I think it does a Family and Friends tonight, and then I think it opens in the next few days.
The burgers themselves sound like they've been kind of a hot trend, huh?
Oh,
burgers, absolutely, because they're serving 30 different burgers.
Which I had someone say, so how do you market a gourmet burger in a state that doesn't permit you to cook it less than medium well?
And I said, you know. That's a frustrating thing. That's my big
question. Well, there are places that do cook it.
But they're not supposed to.
But it's illegal.
They say they grind their own beef.
Still illegal. Can I just put this in big cap?
There are no...
It's illegal.
You cannot do it.
Comminute beef and serve it anything less than...
In this state.
In this state.
In this state.
Not...
Huh. Even if you grind the meat yourself.
Even if you grind the meat.
So the places that are cooking them to your order are doing it kind of...
Illegally.
Yes.
Under the table.
Under the table,
so to
speak.
Bill Hardister.
Well, but given
don't tell anybody, because somebody just told me about a place where they said, and they'll cook it the way you want it, and now I have to say, but don't tell anybody where that place
exactly
is. I don't want to get them in trouble.
I got a press release from one place, and I said, no. Don't send me a press release that says you're doing this illegal thing.
So you'll get a visit,
I've been asked how I want my hamburger cooked.
Well, yes. Not obviously, these places don't know the law. What else don't
they
know?
Oh,
they
do.
They know the law.
If you're sending out a press release, you don't, it seems to me. But let's talk for a second about the emergence of all these hamburger places. We'll have to do that after the break because the music is coming in. But I want to come back and talk about the emergence of all these gourmet hamburger places. What sets them apart from Burger King or McDonald's? Why would you pay $10 or $12 for a hamburger? We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by RBC Bank, part of the Royal Bank of Canada, a global financial institution serving more than 16 million clients worldwide, committed to guiding clients through uncertain economic times. RBCAnswers.com. Well, coming up tomorrow on this program, we are going to be taking a look at a tsunami of people coming into the community college system to be retrained for jobs. For new jobs because of the jobs people have lost in this recessionary economy. And that's putting the pinch on our community colleges because they are being squeezed by state budgets that have been reduced. So we'll hear from some experts on community colleges, including CPCC President Tony Zeiss, tomorrow morning with guest host Chris Clackham at 9 o'clock.
The attempt by Illinois Governor Blagojevich to cash in on filling a vacant U.S. Senate seat was just part of a five-year-long investigation. An update on the charges against the Democratic governor and his chief of staff, and a look at other political corruption cases in the news. The Diane Rehm Show, Thursday.
And as always, you're invited to join the conversation coming up from 10 to noon right after Charlotte Talks on The Diane Rehm Show. That's here on 90.7 FM, WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE in Hickory. I'm Mike Collins. We're joined in our Spirit Square studio by four culinary luminaries. I like that, culinary luminary. Helen Schwab is the critic for the Charlotte Observer. Tricia Childress is a critic for Creative Loafing. Heidi Bellotto is a food and wine writer for Charlotte Living. And Peter Reinhardt is our chef on assignment from Johnson & Wales University. What is with it, all these hamburger restaurants that are opening up? We have, I think you mentioned, what was the one on South Boulevard?
Big Daddy's is on East Boulevard.
East Boulevard is one on South Boulevard.
John Duncan is opening one on South Boulevard, or in that area.
There's one in
Carolina.
There's one in South Park.
Yeah, Carolina counter.
And then
Nick's is uptown.
Nick's is getting ready to open. And you were just telling us off the air that there's a gourmet burger at where? Cosmos, where you can get like one of those real upscale burgers. That
and what constitutes a gourmet?
Well, and Ruth's Chris has a burger, and all those places have burgers.
But I'm talking about places that specialize in serving hamburgers and, believe it or not, French fries. So and I've been to a couple of them, and I still think the McDonald's French fries are the best.
They are.
But what constitutes a gourmet burger, and how do you explain the phenomenon of people in a recessionary economy be wanting go out and want to sit down and eat a hamburger that they paid a lot more than they would have paid a burger?
I think it was a phenomena before it was a recessionary economy. Okay. It was about hamburgers.
What is it?
I just think it was a new you know, there's turkey burgers, there's tuna burgers, it was just a new thing, a new carrot
And the Wagyu burger.
I think the gourmet burger, if you're looking for a definition, I think it's A, $7 or more, and I think B, it's got ingredients that are not your typical ingredients, or combinations of ingredients that are not your typical ingredients. Rolls that are somebody pays attention to for a change, condiments that make a difference. And so all of that creates an experience that is not your typical hamburgerette. I mean, Morton's will tell you they started their whole business based on their burger.
Really?
Because one guy made a burger for another guy, and they said, this is fabulous, let's start our own restaurant. So there is a longstanding history of expensive burgers, but a gourmet burger, I think, in my view at least, has more attention paid to the ingredients and the combinations.
But also the beef, too. The beef, the different kinds of beef that you
can
get.
The beef, yeah.
Some of them get better beef.
But a lot of them say they have the organic beef or the Wagyu. Yes.
Or the Kobe.
Yeah.
Well, Kobe is really, I mean, let's just parenthetically say here, we throw that word around a lot, and Kobe beef is a very particular, raised in Japan, Wagyu is the breed. Lots of places that are telling you they're selling you Kobe are not selling Kobe beef. So we just need to be really cautious about that word. Yeah. Wagyu beef
are
is a breed.
Are they not selling it knowingly?
People will mean Kobe-style beef, which means Snake River raises Wagyu cattle, which, again, is the breed that is used in Kobe beef. But Kobe beef must technically be treated or processed in Kobe, Japan, and shipped out. It's like $100.
The real Kobe.
So they say American style.
It's similar to
And if you were to get a real Kobe beef burger, you're going to pay a lot more than what's being charged
on
the menus
so
here.
Tom Sasser bought a couple Wagyu beef and had them raised by his brother. We wrote about this in Carolinas. So you can butcher that beef, and it is not Kobe beef, but it is close as you're going to get.
The same breed of Kobe that Kobe comes from.
It would be like talking about champagne and sparkling wines.
Yes.
Champagne is from champagne.
Right.
Kobe is from Kobe.
How do you explain the plethora, the explosion of steak restaurants, high-priced steak restaurants in this town in the last three or 4 years?
I ask everyone the same question.
It's amazing. Shima just opened uptown.
But at least Shima has something different.
I love that
place. Fleming's opened, I said, it's exactly the same.
Is there really room in the city for that many steakhouses?
Apparently so, although I have heard rumblings of a few maybe not.
Is there a difference in your minds as people who eat out a lot in the steak you get at Morton's versus the Capitol Grill versus Sullivan's versus McIntosh's versus the Palm
Ruth's Chris.
Yeah. Is there a difference?
I don't know that there's a difference in the
ambience,
the ambiance, in the service, perhaps in the side dishes, in the style of cooking. It's to me all steak on a plate, and you know that then you can throw the ranch house is steak on a plate and beef and bottle is steak on a plate, and maybe not to the same scale as those, but there's a lot of steak in Charlotte.
Yeah, it's definitely a genre that is pretty narrowly defined, but within that genre, I think there are huge differences between the Capitol Grill and Morton's. I mean, there's a huge
difference. In how they cook the steak or what?
Well, there's differences in the beef. I mean, some people are using certified Angus, some people are using prime, some people are using dry-aged. I mean, there is a lot of – can you taste all that difference? I'm not convinced that most people can.
I have a question.
I forgot to mention Del Frisco's.
But I don't think that people –
name all 17 – is it 17 we're up to? And then BLT's going in – Laurent is doing BLT in the –
BLT is out of New York, and that's those initials stand for the chef – Lawrence Torundel.
And BLT Steak.
BLT Steak. He's also got BLT other types of restaurants. So all these chefs, what's happened is a lot of big name chefs have gone into steakhouses because we've known it's the secret of all restaurateurs is that's where the money is to be made is in steakhouses.
Exactly.
You call them chop houses is actually
the
term.
Because that's something I can cook.
Exactly. But
well.
I mean, that's
and
well,
it's
but you can't buy what they buy. Now, your steak that you're cooking at home is virtually never going to be like the steak you're paying that kind of money for. So that really is the difference because prime USDA prime.
Well, I can cook a baked potato for less than $6.
Yeah, you can. So my advice is, don't drink a lot of wine and don't order any of the steak.
But I have one question about steakhouses. Is there a place in Charlotte that you would recommend that's not considered a, quote, steakhouse, but that turns out a steak every bit as good as you would get at a steakhouse? I've heard of a few restaurants that have great steaks, but they're not known as, quote, steakhouses. For instance, a lot of people tell me Noble's is where they go for a steak, and that's
duck fat. Two words for you, duck fat.
Is that the secret?
Uh-huh.
All right,
adds duck fat?
Fabulous. Seared in duck fat.
Well,
huge difference.
Well, that's a great chef's trick,
huh? And the server said, this table of cardiologists next to you all ordered the duck fat.
By our count, actually producer Tim Ross's count, Charlotte has at least 10 restaurants in the top-ranking category in Zagat's American Top Restaurants
isn't that good
for
news?
2009. And another 10, yes, it's very good news, in the other noteworthy places category. Is that about right for a city this size?
To clarify, Zagat's is, that's called America's Tops, and it does the top 10 ranked and then 10 other places. So they do 20 restaurants in every city they choose to survey in, at least 20. I think that's the smallest number. So you'll see New York has, probably 40 if you pick up that book. So that is a survey done in Charlotte. It is not saying that Charlotte has 10 restaurants in America's Top. That is Zagat saying, here are the top 10 restaurants
in Charlotte.
according to our survey.
And those are Barrington's, McNinch House, McIntosh's, steak place, Noble's, Capitol Grill, steak place, Carpe Diem, Fig Tree, Toscana, Luce, and Upstream. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with those choices?
I would.
Did they leave any off that you would have put on?
I don't agree with those choices.
Okay. Why not?
Well, I'd have to sit down and look at it and think about it later. Okay, someone else talk for a while.
Bottom of the page.
Okay. Barrington's is a wonderful place, and he's getting ready to open another place with his brother.
On Montford,
called Good Food. Very exciting.
That's a new kind of food mecca part of town, isn't it, by Montford?
It's a new old.
It's been around.
It used to be the original Restaurant Row over on Montford, and now there's all kinds of stuff over there.
It's becoming a real destination.
I saw him the other day. He said he was probably a month out from opening. It's going to be a cool little place. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, over on Montford.
Barrington's makes a lot of people's top 5 or 10 lists.
It's been on that Zagat list for years.
And it's hard to get into because it's small.
Because it's small, yeah.
But that's the attraction.
Yeah,
That's the attraction, and it's very personal. He has good servers.
Well, he spent 8 years not opening another place, which I think is part of the brilliance. He did not do really well the first couple years and then open another place, as many, 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 many people like to do. Mm-hmm. He decided he wanted to perfect what he had, and he did well fast. Really respect
it. Immediately, all of us loved it, and so did everybody else. And Helen's right; he's just stuck with it, and he's developed
a
loyal clientele. And
Are there any restaurants that that didn't make that list that you might want to add to that list?
I think Sonoma. And Tim Grody cooks very similarly to the way Bruce does. Mm-hmm. And it's that new American cuisine. Mm-hmm. It's, and I think all these chefs that do a lot of local food, I think Bonterra.
Well,
I love Bonterra.
List. Aren't they on the list?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Did you say?
They're on the next list.
Oh, they're on the next list, yeah. Which you haven't read yet.
They're on the other noteworthy restaurants. Yeah.
Excellent.
That would be Bentley's Blue, Bonterra Dolce, Fiamma, Ilios Noche. Is that how you say that?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
P.F. Chang's, Radcliffe, Sonoma, and
Well,
Zebra.
And let's talk about that for a minute.
What, P.F. Chang?
Well,
there's a chain. That's the only chain on the list.
It is. No, Charlotte voters, there is a template for what they like to see, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Zagat voters. And it is, you'll see this list leans much more to the upscale, much more to the formal, much more to the traditional. Mm-hmm. They don't like, Lulu's not in that top 10, and I would put Lulu in my top 10 any day.
I think many people mm-hmm. would, yeah.
So you have to
That's
take it with
on,
a grain
on
of.
Central Avenue, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
And you spoke about it here 3 years ago when it first opened, and I think here was the first place where the word went out about Lulu, and it's still,
it's
most people
place.
Say it's still one of their favorite places.
Yeah.
It's a really fun place. So I think a lot of those kinds of places don't make that list.
Because they don't have the numbers, because they're not big enough to draw the kind of numbers that would vote.
Well, and I think people vote thinking about a certain, what are the best restaurants, again with the air quotes, and thinking that means upscale. And I think I'd love to see our definition of that change.
But I don't know that you can say that Ilios Noches is an upscale restaurant.
No, but it's not in the top 10 either, and I think that's in that second 20.
It's in the second year.
And
I'm surprised that the Cheesecake Factory didn't make the list. That's the number one, I think, grossing restaurant in terms of numbers in the city. And so people obviously love
Max.
The 16.
Max.
Well, Max is maybe now has replaced it. But
yeah.
But the Cheesecake Factory certainly makes a lot of money there.
What is Max?
Max is the number one grossing restaurant
what
in
is
the
it?
City.
It's
Max Beach Shop Barbecue.
Barbecue.
Have you not ever been to Max?
Owned by J.P. Duncan, the same guy who owns Bonterra.
And
is getting ready to open the burger place. And it was listed by Rick Brown, who we've had on the show here, the barbecue maven, as having the best brisket in the country. Best barbecue brisket.
Oh, I recall
best Texas brisket.
Yeah.
I'm sure the people in Texas appreciate that.
Oh my God.
He announced it right before we played the Dallas Cowboys in football, I think.
It's a great place.
He was on the show recently, was he not?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. A couple of emails here. I got the chance to dine. This is from Cameron, who says, I got the chance to dine at the New Mez restaurant, which is part of the Epicenter Theaters, which opens officially, I think, tonight, doesn't it, or tomorrow night? The food was amazing, and I was intrigued by the concept. They serve what they call global food, and guests may carry small plates and cocktails into the movie with them, which says to me, go to that movie theater this week.
Yeah.
So, what do your guests think of the concept global food? What does that mean in Charlotte?
They do have little trays in the theater, though.
Yeah, right.
That's a cool idea.
Check the seats next week. Yeah.
I've probably been doing that illegally for a long time.
I have too. I went to an Asian movie and took some Asian food, and the person behind me said, "Oh, it smells so good in here. It's like a movie."
Smell-o-vision.
I think global food there's the restaurant Global, which is also out kind of in the Ballantyne area. It's just, we were talking earlier about fusion. It's when restaurants do, instead of being all Italian or all French or all Japanese, they kind of do a little bit of everything. You know, Blues started out like that,
mm-hmm.
where
Cosmos.
They have in Cosmos Taste the World. That's exactly, it's a little bit of everything. And I think that's intriguing to people. I think they can sort of like one-stop shopping. If we're going out and you want Japanese and I want Chinese and Peter wants Italian and,
that's
you know, it's
you
all
go.
There in one place. Yeah.
It's huge risk. Because it is difficult to do well,
mm-hmm.
and I think most places don't.
Well, in fact, Triaterra, which means, you know, three lands, mm-hmm. just changed their menu. Instead of they had Italian, Spanish, and French, and now they're just going to be Italian with, I think they're going to leave a few Spanish.
Now they're calling it Mediterranean.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that because Italian food is still America's favorite
Oh, you bet. Number one, 90% of their business, I think he told me, was the Italian stuff. So he kept the sangria, which is great sangria, y'all.
You need to get there.
Nice little place.
So you'll make an exception to the no drinking.
Well, if you have the sangria, Triatera.
Thank you. They're related to Fiamma, too, the guys that have Triatera.
Yeah. Another great little Italian place, just while we're talking about that, is Passionate Bistro. Which is
How
in Fort Mill.
How cute is that place?
Passion, and then the number 8.
Okay.
It's 2 miles into South Carolina.
I read your review of
that. Yeah, 2 miles into South Carolina from the heart of Pineville.
Yeah.
And so you go, it actually used to be one of those poker palace kind of place. Yeah, yeah, on 51. But it's not called 51. It's down in Fort Mill. And it's a teeny little place, and you will drive past it. I mean, it's a mustard color building with no windows and a teeny little sign. But it's great.
Global cuisine?
It's Italian Mediterranean.
Luca Annunziata, I think his name is.
And his wife is Jessica, and she's the hostess and runs the front of the bar. They're a great couple. And
they're
so much fun. They're very cute, and they do a great job. The food is outstanding.
And when they found the place, a woman said, if you're not going to sell fried chicken and Mountain Dew, you're going down.
So and they have proof
he said,
that
well,
person
I think
wrong.
We'll just give it a chance.
It's little, it's teeny, it's another teeny restaurant, so everybody's going to go there and nobody, you know, don't all rush there tonight.
Yes, has it picked up a following?
Yes, it's picked up a big following. And
it's very dark
in there, so just be prepared. Like they have little teeny book lights that they give you to read the menu, and by that time your eyes sort of adjust.
Is that beef and bottle?
Why is it
darker.
So dark?
Darker.
It used to be the Poker Palace.
Romantic. It's romantic.
Isn't that what we call an intimate restaurant?
Yes.
It's dark?
But they do a great
Everything
job.
Everything looks good.
And it's Italian, you know, so it's
Paul in Monroe writes, please try to include some discussion of the outlying counties in your discussion of the local dining scene. Monroe and Union County have been a culinary wasteland with a few exceptions. Right now, we have a few good places. The most well-established is Sante of Matthews, not really Union County, but close enough for us to claim it. A new place in Monroe of all places, Bistro 74, which you've written about it. A very good dinner place with well-prepared and imaginative dishes. Think of slightly north of Broad without the decor. Okay.
Oh.
Bistro 74's neighbor Stone Table, located across Highway 74, is a
catering. He's got everything on my list.
A catering operation operated by Union County native Matthew Sanya. Yeah. He's a young fellow with experience at Dean and DeLuca and a few restaurant kitchens, but is mostly self-taught, has a natural gift for cooking. It's only open for lunch, but it's worth the trip. Think of slightly north of Broad in a furniture store.
Wait, does this guy have a blog?
Who
sent this email? Because he needs to have his own
slightly
blog.
Slightly north of Broad.
I love this. Yeah.
We have a place downtown. He says Blue Moon Cafe. Blue is spelled B-L-U.
He has every single thing on my list.
That can be very good, but suffers from inconsistent service and preparation. One day, great. Next day, just mediocre. Think of south of Broad. No. I hope you'll be able to talk about our area and maybe include these places.
Can I add one to that list?
Yeah.
Isn't there one in Kannapolis that's supposed to be doing some interesting
food? No, I don't know about Kannapolis. But I have Union County in Monroe.
Murnoch's place?
But right next to that, right next to the big research center, yeah.
Bistro 74 is a great little place. It's Spanish, and it's I don't know about slightly north of Broad, but it's a great little place. It's family run by a guy from Florida.
And it's on 74.
It's on 74 as you're heading into Monroe, and it used to be like a ranch house or something.
So if you're coming from Charlotte, it's on the right or the left?
Left. On the left, just before you get to the for Pete's sake, I forgot the new chicken place, the barbecue chicken place.
Okay.
Alabama. Bob Gibson's. It's right before you get to Bob Gibson's. Yeah.
Hold these thoughts. We'll come right back with more Charlotte Talks on WFAE. And our program is made possible in part today by DCI Home Resource, serving individual high-rise and mountain homeowners, traditional to contemporary cabinetry, luxury plumbing, and gourmet appliances. On display at DCI's showroom in Charlotte's historic South End. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, Steve Roberts is in for Diane for a discussion of recent political corruption cases in the news, including an update on the federal charges against Illinois Governor Blagojevich. I knew I'd have to face that word sooner or later, and I just did it. Norm Ornstein from the American Enterprise Institute on the panel at 10 o'clock, along with Stan Brand, former counsel for the House of Representatives, and Clarence Page, the syndicated columnist from the Chicago Tribune. Should be an interesting hour, and that starts at 10 o'clock right here on 90.7 WFAE.
Looking to get your news fix for the day? Tune in to hear the latest in business.
If this impacts us, it's also going to impact the people that we hire, that we use for our construction projects. It's going to ripple on down.
To what's happening in the arts.
I can't change the way I approach a given musical situation just because there's some bomb going off in Peshawar.
Wake up to the world with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Let NPR's Morning Edition help you understand the whole story. Weekdays from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, which translates to 9323. Charlotte Talks at WFAE.org, or you can be part of our blog at WFAE.org/Charlotte Blogs. We're sitting here with Helen Schwab from the Charlotte Observer, Trisha Childress from Creative Loafing, and Johnson & Wales University, Heidi Bolotto, who is with Charlotte Living. All three are food writers and critics. Peter Reinhart, chef on assignment from Johnson & Wales University. And we're talking about restaurants and food, and we left off in Union County. I think you had
and I have three
you
more
to
add
about,
to that list. A great little place in Waxhaw is called Southsiders. It's a little deli right next to the Volunteer Fire Department. Down by the bridge on the Charlotte side of the train tracks. And a teeny little place, and she does all organic stuff, and it's great.
What's it called?
Southsiders. She's from Chicago.
Nice.
And she does a great Chicago dog there. But then she does all kinds of deli sandwiches and soups and stuff. Then there's a little place called Aladdin's that's off of 485. I think it's like exit 49, maybe.
That's right.
And it's a Lebanese deli, and it's delicious food, and they do homemade soups that are to die for. Like, there's a lentil chili that's incredible, and great teas and smoothies and juices, and all. They do a pita bread sandwich that's got grape leaves. Stuffed grape leaves are in the sandwich. It's
an
incredible place. And then next, right, we talked about Sante, which we all talked about last time, too, a great little place in Matthews. And next door to that is a place called Gato Gato that's in an old bank building that just opened up that's pretty good.
What's the significance of the name?
Gato Gato is a dish, an Indonesian dish of roasted grilled vegetables, roasted vegetables.
Vegetarian dish.
But it's not an Indonesian. It's because the owners.
It's global.
The owner. The owners are dating, and they went on vacation in Indonesia. And at a place called Gato Gato, George, who was the owner, told me after way too much wine, his girlfriend said, wouldn't it be nice to have a little place like this in Charlotte? And he apparently agreed. That's why they called it Gato Gato.
And the rest is history.
He's Greek and she's Asian.
Chinese?
Yeah.
Asian.
And they have this little restaurant with an Indonesian name. Yeah. And it's an old bank building, so the old vault, which they couldn't move, is the cooler.
Oh, that's cool.
So, cool. So, and then one other place in Pineville called called Maestro's on Johnston Drive in Pineville, which used to, it's a little white house that used to be a million other restaurants, but it's a great little place.
Yeah.
What kind of food?
The one that was in Teal?
Continental, kind of. It's Kyle Burke, who used to be the pastry chef at Peter Rose.
Mm. All right, we have a couple phone calls. Put your headphones on, because you'll be able to hear these calls a little bit better. And we'll start with James in Asheboro. Welcome, James.
Hey, thank you, Mike. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I just wanted to tell you, my wife and I, we love to go to Charlotte and eat, try the different restaurants. And I've heard a lot of good things about this M5 restaurant. What is your thoughts on M5.
That's in South Park.
Mm-hmm. South Park.
It's part of the Harper's Group.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's beautifully done. It's a Mediterranean kind of food.
And the M5 has nothing. Somebody tell me what it means. What it stands for?
Yeah, it stands for the five partners who are all from Morganton.
Okay.
So the five Morganton guys. I used to think it meant five Mediterranean countries.
Yeah.
Like Tria Terra, so Quattro Terra.
Yeah.
But it's no five guys from Morganton. But a clever name, yeah.
So how's the food?
It's pretty good. They had trouble when they first started. The grill went out
within a couple months of them opening.
There was a flaw in the hood.
It wasn't their fault.
There was a design problem and the hood caught on fire. And so they couldn't use their wood-burning oven for quite a while. But I believe it's up and running
crippling
now.
Crippling for the menu. So it was really, it was difficult. But it is up and running now. And they shifted the menu around a little
bit. I've had some great meals there myself. I love their Mediterranean food. Their various little pita bread dips and things like that are terrific.
Yeah.
And Tom Condren is the executive chef. He's very, very talented chef, and you know, Upstream made the top 10 list. He watches over that and a number of other restaurants.
Okay. Let's go to Richfield. Calls from places we've never gotten calls from. Jennifer, welcome. Where's Richfield?
It's in northern Stanley County.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment. I know that some of the restaurants that you had mentioned earlier, including the one you just said with Tom Condren, I'm a local vegetable grower and with eggs and things, and I see the chefs every Saturday morning from Sonoma, from Radcliffe, from Barrington's.
Yes.
And they all use local food.
It's really important and really makes a difference.
And a big trend, I think, that's really growing.
Which we've talked about a lot on this program, actually.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the value and things like that, I mean, they're not only are you talking about people going out to their local restaurants and keep going out to eat to support it, they're supporting local farmers, which are keeping us in business. I'm a local grower.
That's a great point and something to really consider as we choose where we're going to eat. Where is not only helping where we eat not only helps the economy in that way, but it can help the economy in a much broader way if we're thinking about who's growing the food.
So what market are you at?
We go to the Charlotte Regional and also the Matthews Market.
Great. Good.
And one other quick thing about that, when you're talking about getting a great burger and people who undercook them and, you know, scary things like that, the truth is when some of these better chefs, and I don't know who says what, you know, in public, but when they're getting good food and know who they're getting it from, they don't have to be afraid of having a pink pork chop.
Absolutely.
Or a burger that's done really the way you want it because they have that relationship with the grower and it's not coming from a big truck and, you know.
So true. That is so true. You know,
that's
great
why you need to make your burgers at home. Because you can cook them how you want them and you buy good product.
And you can,
from smart
and the public can buy all that too. She's right. Bauckham beef and Grateful Growers pork and they're all at a lot of farmers markets in town. Great point. And the Matthews Market's open through the winter.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for your call, Jennifer. We'll go back to the phones in a second. First, Paul in Monroe has a correction on a restaurant location, which we've already talked about. Bistro 74 is just past Chick-fil-A and before Zaxby's and not Bob Gibson's. Thanks for the mention. Paul must work there or be the owner. John in Charlotte says, I would enthusiastically agree with your panel's recommendation of Lulu's as one of, in my opinion, four of the four or five best restaurants in Charlotte. I'm a little late on this, but the best steak I've had in Charlotte was served at Lulu's. Can we go back to Pineville and throw in a mention of the Waldhorn restaurant, I think, on Lancaster Highway, just past the Polk Memorial. The chef proprietor there, Thomas Mayer, serves consistently high-quality German cuisine that reminds me of the food my German grandmother served me as a child, only better. And there are not many German restaurants.
And
so
it's the only
Waldhorn is
town.
A wonderful restaurant, and he's a CIA graduate, and his wife is a product of parents who had
CIA?
The Culinary Institute of America in
the other
Park,
CIA.
The other place. The other place. And his wife grew up in restaurants. Her parents had restaurants in Stuttgart, Germany, and they're here now, too. And his father is a baker from Long Island, and he's here, and they make the most amazing apple strudel. I have to avoid them.
Bert in Charlotte writes, one thing that has not been mentioned is that during such economic times as we have today, corporate travel and entertainment expenses are often curbed. Your panelists speak as if all dining is personal, but surely many restaurants, such as Morton's and the Capitol Grill, are quite dependent on expense accounts. So if times are tough, the top-end restaurants will suffer.
Well, and you're seeing that with places closing for lunch uptown, a couple places that are closing for lunch because they don't have the lunch business, and that's a very corporate effect.
Josh writes, when I took a new job down here in South Charlotte, it was tough to leave the uptown lunch locations behind, but I now have some of my favorite restaurants right near my office. Bangkok, is it Ocha?
Ocha, yeah, great place.
Best Thai in Charlotte, he says. Salsa's, great Mexican. Cajun Yard Dog, one of my top five. New South, formerly Dakota's, which is really good. I like that. Mm-hmm. And don't forget the Fresh Market. And you can't forget the Fresh Market. I don't know it doesn't say.
Well, it's a great place to shop, Fresh Market.
Yeah.
They have
sandwiches and stuff there. Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right, let's go.
In fact, I like to eat even at places like Earth Fair, you know, and places, markets that have nice deli foods. You can usually get some good salads there. You can get killer chicken salad at Costco even. You know?
Yes, they do have killer chicken. I bought it Saturday. It is killer.
It is amazing.
A little too much mayonnaise for my taste.
You're such a critic.
Another great little place in Pineville for breakfast and for lunch is called Dive In. It's where the old Dairy King used to be. On South Boulevard. Thing. Yeah, it's a great little place. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
On South Boulevard as you're heading towards 51, but it's Polk Street there.
Okay.
And it used, on your right across from an Eckerd's or a Walgreens, is It's called Divin, D-I-V-I-N.
Okay. And what kind of food is that?
Breakfast and lunch.
Breakfast and lunch, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's great.
Let's go to wedding. Well, go ahead.
Speaking of breakfast, just because people can never get enough breakfast, the guys from Nolan Kitchen are going to open a place called Big Sky in South Charlotte.
Oh, yeah, right.
In
Archie Kell. A little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And they're going to serve breakfast all day. And I could not be more excited.
It's going to be a big place. Yeah. Big, bold
it's
statement.
Huge. Yeah. Huge. Yeah.
Let's go to Weddington. Frank, welcome to WFAE.
Good morning. Hope y'all are doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Thanks.
Hey, Frank.
I was wondering why they didn't mention any seafood, fish, and things like that. I hadn't heard that yet.
All right, that's a good question. What about what are the best seafood restaurants in your mind in town? Not just high price places, but just good seafood.
I think Upstream is a great seafood restaurant, and they do a terrific Sunday brunch.
Fins.
So. Yeah, GW
Fins.
A lot of people have been really raving about the food there.
Peter was pointing at the corner.
I was pointing just down the street, just down the street from the studio here, about a block and a half away on Tryon around 9th
and Ocean Air. Okay. It's a great Ocean Air. It's more expensive, but the stuff there is unbelievable.
But I think that every really good restaurant offers great seafood. I mean, at those restaurants that you have on that list, you could get a really good.
Well, I'll tell you where I had fabulous seafood the other day was at Chima. The salmon and the swordfish there just melts in your mouth.
But if you go, don't let them put the sauce on.
No, I agree. Much better without the sauce.
Yeah,
much better.
Yeah,
but it melts
little,
in your mouth.
Does it come on skewers and everything?
No, it comes on a platter. It's the only thing that doesn't come on one of the big skewers.
Uh-huh. Just to back up for everybody, this is a Brazilian churrascaria, which is and it's sort of rodizio style, which means that, let's try to use less Spanish. Servers walk around the room with big swords of grilled meat, with big hunks of grilled beef and pork and lamb, and they slice off thin slices for you as they walk around the room. They offer it to you if the little plastic tab on your table is turned to orange, I believe. And that means, yes, I would like every single person who walks by the table to offer me whatever they have. And if you turn it to black, that means, no, thank you, I just am taking a break for a while. And so there are 17 different kinds of meat.
How expensive is that?
They're doing a great deal. Till the end of the year, it's $39.
Oh, my gosh.
And then it's going to go to?
And then it goes to $49.
Still
but this
a
is
pretty
the,
decent
and
value.
And you get all that
well,
meat
this
and
is not the first.
Buffet.
This is not the first place like this we've had. This is the first high-end place we've had. Okay.
Although
we've had
the prices have been the same.
We've first had, one in well, Center City, though, right?
The rodeo is only $29.95 max.
And no, I'm sure I paid more than that, but they're gone now, so.
Yeah, they're gone.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, I think Chima does it better than anybody else, and it's a beautiful restaurant.
And there's a big salad bar in the middle of the room.
The owner's Brazilian.
You know what? There's no getting around a salad bar with a sneeze guard. It's just right there in the middle of the room.
All right, Frank, did you have anything else to say, by the way?
Yeah, sorry.
Yes, I had another question. I used to hear about a place, I don't know the name of it, served Argentina beef on the other side of Pineville.
Tango
Argentina. They're gone.
It was a great place.
It's sad.
What was it?
Tango Argentina. It was owned by a couple who drove through here, and their son liked Michael Jordan, so they decided to open a restaurant.
Are they still open?
No. They closed years ago.
If Michael Jordan would have just eaten there once, they might still be in existence.
Frank, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Jerry in Charlotte writes, has anyone picked up on a growing trend in eating organic raw food? I find many places on the East and West Coast, but not much here. Bright Spot Home Economist on South Boulevard has an excellent raw food section from desserts to main meals. Yay for forward-thinking people.
You might check Blink Uptown, B-L-Y-N-K. That is a new place. I'm not sure what the raw food lineup is, but I know they're really focusing on organics and locally grown, and it's a lighter fare. So I think they may have that. I haven't seen that menu yet, but... That'd be one to check.
Joey in Charlotte says, please give kudos to Mr. Reinhardt on Pietown. We had lunch there for the first time last week, and it was awesome, especially the red pepper sauce, which wasn't exactly hot but had a great depth of flavor. The waitstaff was also attentive and knowledgeable. Tell Peter to keep up the good work. Also, Peter.
Write her that check
from
now,
the,
Peter.
From our blog.
Yes.
My husband and I really enjoyed ourselves at Pietown. The cheese is the best I have ever tasted on a pizza. Thank you so
much.
Well, lots of O's in that.
I will praise that cheese. It comes from Chapel Hill Creamery. It's a domestic mozzarella made from, I think, Jersey cows, golden milk. And we use it instead of the traditional buffalo mozzarella, because we like it as much, and it's made right here in the state,
which
is
great.
Important. Yeah.
Dave in Pineville has an interesting tip, one I hadn't thought of. Dave, go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I just like to know, my wife and I usually try a lot of restaurants for lunch. We get a lot of specials,
yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
we find the service is at least as good as when the servers aren't as harried as in the evenings.
Yeah,
it's a great tip, that is.
And you get a reasonable portion for not a fortune. Sometimes it's the same portion you serve it. They serve at dinner,
yeah.
and you're getting it mm-hmm. for a lunch price. So that is brilliant, Dave. Very good point.
And a good way to audition the restaurant.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the tip, Dave. Appreciate it. Chris in Steel Creek, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi.
I would like to know who makes the best she-crab soup in town.
You know, real she-crab.
That'd be a little south of Broad to get real she-crab.
Yeah. down.
Wait a minute. Let's call on what
I
was
this? There are only a few places that actually do make it, aren't there?
There aren't
You know,
many.
And I don't even know that anybody's really making real she-crab with the roe.
With real she-crab.
I had yeah. my daughter, who's in D.C., texted me and said, what's the difference between cream of crab and she-crab? And really, if you don't have roe, there isn't much difference. So I've heard...
Somebody's doing it, and now I just
Eddie's,
blanking
I think,
on
still
it.
Does
oh,
it.
Eddie's,
they called
yeah.
in last time. And Hotel Charlotte, I think, does
yeah.
it.
Yeah, Eddie's is still...
Is that right? I didn't remember.
It's still, I think, the gold standard here in town for...
Yeah,
for
and there's like anybody's two locations, so...
Well, Clay in Charlotte... No, not Clay. I forgot who wrote it. Oh, Jack in Charlotte says, don't put too much emphasis on Zagat's. It's generally regarded as a joke. People would do better listening to the three critics and taking
aww.
Notes on
thank
which
you.
Places
thank
they
you.
Agree on. So, and those would be Helen Schwab, Tricia Childress, Heidi Bolado from The Observer, Creative Loafing, and Charlotte Living, respectively, and Peter Reinhardt, our chef on assignment from Johnson & Wales University. We have 1,000 things to talk about and not a second of time left. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.